This is a test of the emergency broadcast system. The broadcasters of your area, in voluntary cooperation with federal, state, and local authorities, have developed this system to keep you informed in the event of an emergency.
You sounded like Dirty Harry just then.
I'm a moth. Half man, half dog. I'm my own best friend.
I'm gonna make him an offer, Jim.
Not even supposed to be here today.
I'm your huckleberry.
And what about Brett's boss?
Bruh.
To hell with Brett.
Inconceivable!
Welcome back once again for another episode of the BoxOfficeBoredom.com movie podcast. As always, Jason sitting here. Along with me is, of course, Drew Schlosser, and our special guest of the day.
I'm Cobra Jim. My friends call me Jim.
All right, yes, Cobra Jim is our guest today. The movie we are talking about actually comes out on DVD here, actually within the next few days here, and the movie is called Source Code, starring Jake Gyllenhaal. What we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit just to review the movie and not spoil anything, but there will be a halfway point or so that we will, at that point, just kind of break off into spoiler stuff. And we'll try to give you a good warning of that so you can turn it off if you haven't seen the movie. So without further ado, let's talk a little bit about Source Code and what it is. Drew, do you want to start off kind of give your thoughts or what?
Jake Gyllenhaal is the main character, and he wakes up in this train and doesn't know what he's doing there. It's everything around him is foreign to him, and he thinks he's somebody else than what the world is telling him. And come to find out, he's actually in this thing called the Source Code, which is a program that lets you go back and relive 8 minutes of a certain time. And he's a soldier from Afghanistan who was placed on this train that was exploded in Chicago, and he is reliving those 8 minutes before the explosion to find out who the bomber is and to prevent a future one going on in downtown.
Yeah, that's pretty much hit it on the head there. I guess our first thing to ask, start with Cobra there. Did you enjoy the movie?
Yeah, I thought the movie on its own was pretty good, worth seeing, I would say.
I actually did enjoy the movie. I had a fun time, you know, actually watching it. There was a point where I wasn't too pleased with the overall outcome of the thing, which I'm sure we'll get into. But I had a fun ride doing it, and I thought that they had built a really strange, almost kind of time travel-esque pattern that was really a lot of fun. And it just kind of, in the end, it just kind of fizzled out for me, I think. Especially knowing that, you know, it was the director of Moon from, you know, before. I mean, that was a great movie. And then this one is kind of a follow up. I was a little disappointed. But all in all, I mean, it was a solid movie. Drew?
Yeah, I'm really interested in time travel stuff. So anything along those lines that interests me. So I enjoyed the movie as well. Ending of the movie, some people disagreed with, but I was okay with it.
You know, the biggest point to the movie, I suppose, is kind of revolving around Jake Gyllenhaal and, you know, kind of his performance there. And that's really what drives the movie. Guys, his thoughts on Jake? Did he do a good job? Did he not? You know, what were the pluses and minuses there?
I'll be honest. For me, it seemed like it was to be expected. I liked it a lot. I thought he did a good job, but I didn't see anything that was like, oh, wow. This just leaps out at me as being fantastic acting. There's nothing bad, but then again, as I said, there's nothing amazing.
Well, I thought he did a pretty good job. As it was kind of a weird role that he was playing. It's, you know, you could tell he was, you could feel he was a soldier. You know, he'd done, what was that one, Jarhead movie? So, you know, he's had a military background before. I'm sure there's training and just the thinking wise. So I felt like he had that military mindset of him being a soldier. And then the whole, like, trying to figure out this puzzle of what Source Code is and what he's doing and where he is. I thought the confusion was felt there. And then you could You felt the chemistry between him and Christina, I think her name was, the female on the train that he met. I felt like that was good between those two actors, and overall, I think he did a good job. That because he was basically the one you were focused on the entire time, and he was funny, he was serious, he had emotion. I thought he did a good job.
I think I'm with you on that. I think both of you have very good points. Was it anything that I think is like Oscar caliber or anything? No, I really don't. But he was a believable enough character, yeah. And that's what I did enjoy. Like Drew said, the military things. And there were moments where it was like, especially there's a scene where he's calling someone and, you know, that knows kind of the military background. He's very professional, and it's the yes sir, no sir. You know, at that point, really, he just broke into almost military-esque banter, and I liked, you know, that. And like Drew said, but at the same time, he was able to adapt to scenarios and whatnot, and that made it more interesting. Co-star wise, I guess biggest thing I had the problem with was Jeffrey Wright as the guy that was, you know, behind or the creator of Source Code there.
Dr. Rutledge?
Yes, Dr. Yes, whatever. But I think Rutledge is right. I just found his character to be really stupid. I mean, there was like, they tried to make him this evil villain, but they never really followed through on it for me. And it just kind of fell flat. At least that character just didn't work for me. Any thoughts on...
I thought they gave him like almost like a mad scientist feel, like how he was almost like he would get angry about like defending the source code and like, oh well, I'm too smart for this, and I almost felt like he wouldn't make eye contact either. He was always looking down. I thought if it would have just been some regular smart guy who was like, oh, I designed the source code, I thought that would have been better. But they gave him like a different side to him almost. And also with the crutch, I didn't understand. I mean, there's no real relevance to that at all, but he just, I don't think the way he was portrayed was really necessary to the film at all.
Yeah, I'm kind of reminded of there was a horrible Robert De Niro movie called Godsend that was out years ago where he had created a little boy or something, some gene mapping thing. And they kind of made De Niro out to be this crazy mad scientist. And the movie was terrible, and I would never suggest anyone to watch it. But the point is, it was just, Jeffrey Wright was on that same level for me. Just, it was kind of weird. I didn't quite know how it fit in and whatnot. And it just, I don't know, it didn't fit for me.
Yeah, I think they kind of left him a little underdeveloped. Like, in my mind, I'm asking, why is he so obsessed with the source code is perfect, and I'm just smarter than everybody else. And as you brought up the crutch, I didn't understand. Was that supposed to make us pity him, maybe, because he's crippled? I don't know what that was.
Yeah, I had no, like, feelings toward him at all. It was just, he wasn't as much part of the film as I think they were trying to. They could have used a different character, not saying different actor, but like a different style of character to use.
I guess I was the only thing I thought of was maybe the crutch was supposed to be a sign that he believed so much in the source code or something that, you know, it was a sign. It was one of two things. Either it was a sign that a weakness because he was so mentally strong, or, you know, perceived that way, and this is a sign that physically he is, there's still problems with him that is weak. Or two, perhaps, you know, maybe he developed the source code because he was in a scenario that, you know, hurt his legs or something, you know, like an explosion or something. And he was like, what if we can stop this? I'm a genius. I can do this. And so it was kind of, but they never really bring any of this up. So you're at that point, you're just speculating over something that doesn't need to be speculated.
And that almost sounds like a supervillain, you know, like it sounds like it from a superhero movie, like, oh, I was hurt as a little boy, and so I've fought my whole life to set this up. It just sounds like, you know,
yeah,
the same storyline from the superhero movies.
Although I kind of do like that second explanation of how he may have been hurt in an incident, and now it could be solved using his intelligence. But as you said, Jason, they didn't really cover that at all. That was left for you to infer from the movie.
I guess the other big part of the movie, obviously, since Jeffrey Wright, like we said, was kind of underdeveloped, you really had to bank off the relationship, I guess, that came from the commanding officer, Vera Farmiga, or how do you pronounce her last name? What do you know?
I don't know.
Okay. Either way, Goodwin or whatever, it becomes kind of his, the only person that is really truly communicating with him in real. And, I thought that relationship actually worked very well. I thought they worked very well together. And that was probably one of the higher points is when they did pull him out of the source code and made him communicate, those scenes actually worked well for me because of the way they communicated.
Yeah, I agree with that. I liked Goodwin's character.
She seemed almost motherly, but like, I liked how they related just as, like just co-workers almost. But she came off as like sincere, and when he would ask her for something, he'd be like, you know, soldier to soldier, what is this, what is that? And like I think they bonded pretty well, their interactions.
I actually had I had a moment where it was almost the way they played off each other, it almost was like the two actors, you know, just worked together very well. And I had a first thought was, I knew I was wrong right away, but I thought it was Maggie Gyllenhaal at first, and was like, no, that's not Maggie Gyllenhaal, that's that other chick, which I know it's probably most people would laugh at me, but I get those two mixed up for some reason. And at first I was like, oh, well, they're brother and sister, that's why they banter together so, you know, well. And then I was like, no, that's not it, and went from there. So I agree, I thought there was a point that they really jived together, and that made the film work. Any other thoughts from more of a technical standpoint, cinematography, or just director choices and whatnot? Again, this is a tough movie to go forth with without really talking spoilers. But
not so much on the cinematography standpoint. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know a whole lot about that. But as far as the writing goes, I was completely underwhelmed. I love time travel stories and stuff like that, as much as you, Drew, probably. But
no, it's debatable.
Okay. Anyway, their explanation for how the source code would work bothered the heck out of me. Like, the analogy they gave. Can I give them the analogy?
Or do you want you can give the analogy.
Okay. I don't think that's...
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, go for it.
The analogy they gave was, the source code is like when you turn off a light, and you still see a little bit of the afterglow because the filaments are hot, presumably. And that's like how the source code works, is because it allows you to access the body of the person who is about to die because the filaments are still hot. But my problem with that is when the light is switched off, the person whose body you're about to take over is dying. Like, they just died. Right, so how is he able to go 8 minutes before the person died if the source code puts him at the moment of death and then 8 minutes beyond?
So yeah, just kind of some flaws in the logic of how they get there.
I don't know, I didn't like that. I'd like it if it meshed a little better with real physics.
One thing I was surprised with from a writing standpoint was the fact that, we really saw... I mean, there was the underlying mystery of what is the source, how do you get there, what's going on. But really, I mean, we kept seeing the same 8 minutes, a slightly different, thing. And it kept replaying, and it worked for me. I liked that standpoint where somehow we kept watching the same 8 minutes of a train blowing up, each time a little different. And you're like, oh, okay, and you got one more piece of the puzzle. And I liked it from a writing standpoint on that. It was almost kind of a time travel-esque vantage point, I guess.
Yeah.
And I really liked that. In fact, I thought that worked better than even movies like Vantage Point, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty much the exact point I was going to say. The going back and forth, like reliving it, you weren't bored. It was like, it still felt fresh the way he was discovering things in, each way. like I heard its movies was compared to Groundhog Day, but on a train. So I guess you could combine it with Vantage Point and Groundhog Day and a little bit of Deja Vu with the source code. But yeah, I like the way that it wasn't just the exact same and you're like, okay, you know, figure it out already. I'm tired of watching you figure it out. But I like the way it you know, drove through those, the way you finding the puzzle.
Well, before we jump into some spoiler territory here and whatnot, any other last thoughts that we need to discuss? Or otherwise, let's just kind of go around the room on a scale of 1 to 5, I guess. What would you give the movie if you have, you know, 5 being the best?
I'd give it a 4. I'd probably go with a 3.
Okay. I'd go 3.5. So, yeah, I think it's a fun movie, but it definitely has its flaws. So, but still, it's out on DVD, and, you know, pick it up, check it out. It's worth a rental, I think, at least, and, you know, have some fun with it. Just try not to overthink it. Pretty much agreed there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, before we kind of jump into spoiler territory there with Source Code, I think we might as well, you know, plug our site a little bit. And if you like what you've heard, you know, there's ways you can actually help out to keep the lights going around here or whatever. We don't really have lights, but, you know, keeps the site running. One of the ways we do that is with Amazon.com. Drew, I know you buy stuff off Amazon, right?
Frequently.
All right. Give an example of what in the world you would buy off of Amazon.
A 6-foot male-to-male stereo cable.
There you go. Or Jim, how about you?
Yeah, I bought a couple seasons of The Office on Amazon.
See, he goes for the DVD thing. I like that. Nice move there. All right.
I also bought an HDMI cable the other day.
There we go. Well, see, now there's a really easy way that you can help us and still buy stuff off Amazon. Simply go to, before you go to Amazon, go to boxofficeboredom.com. There's a nice little link, a banner ad in the site. Click on that, and that way you can still order stuff, get the exact same price. Drew, you can get your cable or whatever else. You can get your season of The Office. Ooh, we get a fraction of the pennies here. That means we get to keep you know, the site going, the lights on. Everybody's happy. It's a win-win situation. You know, if you're a regular listener, you like what we're doing here, head on over to our site first, click through to Amazon.
You can get any length of Ethernet cable you want.
It's true. Any length. In fact, we encourage the really long ones because they cost more. We get a few more pennies. But, you know, that's just the way it goes. So, all right. Well, let's talk spoilers on this thing. I think we've been waiting long enough. We've probably all been wanting to get into it. So if you're listening, be forewarned. We're going to spoil the heck out of the end of the movie. So the last 5 minutes of that movie, I absolutely hate it. There was the point of the film where he's trying to figure out if he's in the source code. It's an alternate reality or something. And they shut him down. And then we have to have the happy ending afterwards. I absolutely hated that. When she hit the stop button, you know, I thought it should have just held on the nice, the slow, you know, those two kissing, everybody happy, you know, the time it stood still at that point. His big thing was that he wanted to save them all, or, you know, which when you're replaying 8 minutes of the past, you can't, it's already done, you can't save them all, but he found a way of making everyone happy, even as the explosion was going off. That was my thought. He was happy he was with her, everybody else is laughing and enjoying life, in a way he saved them from the monotony of things. And I was like, okay, that's a nice ending. And then it's just kind of left up to you. If you really want to believe hardcore that he was in an alternate reality, more power to you. But if you didn't, it was a nice little happy ending there. Instead, we had to cut off into a whole separate world of, oh, there's two realities. It really did make a whole lot of sense to me. You know, that was kind of my take. Jim, you seem kind of...
Well, my thought was that they're saying parabolic calculus leads to an infinite number of alternate universes. Because you got to think, sure, at the end of this movie, there are two different worlds, but what about the Jake Gyllenhaal that's in this new world? He's probably going to go off and do the exact same thing, start another new world. You know, so they're using the source code to make parallel universes, which I don't understand how that works, and I guess I didn't like it. I kind of wish they had stopped on the freeze frame, too. I don't know, because as you said, it was a computer program. It shouldn't have been able to make another universe, I guess.
Well, it was a very Hollywood ending, the way that they made everything all happy-go-lucky. You could tell that they probably stepped in and said, you know what, let's leave everyone with a smile. But it kind of turned out with a confused look when they left the theater. Because it did seem a little confusing how they continued on, but I'm okay with it because I like conclusions. I like feeling okay. Like, I like walking in out knowing what I saw. But it did seem a little bit confusing how it was in the alternate reality, but it makes sense to me. When he was killed, on life support, his mind was in the other person or whatever his name was, and they were in now an alternate reality from where the movie started, where the train didn't blow up. And so in the real world, he is back in the life support, and then they're just gonna do the same thing over again when the next thing goes wrong. I mean, if you don't try to question it, you just accept what they're telling you, then it makes sense to you.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, again, it's a movie. You just have to believe. Why do we have to question what's in a movie? It's like, what we didn't try to break down what was the dream machine in Inception. Why do we have to question why the source code can make an alternate reality?
Okay, I guess, but the things I kind of wondered, and it was something, again, part of kind of story plot holes there, was what happened to the guy? Because if you think about it, they really screw over the one guy, because Jake Gyllenhaal just kind of keeps invading his brain space and reliving the last same 8 minutes. And then in the end, Jake Gyllenhaal gets to be that guy. And I'm like, did we forget about that dude? Is he dead? Does his life suck? Did we just steal his body? Like, this stuff wasn't really ever... I mean, I'm not sure that... I don't know if you can explain it, but that just bothered me. And I thought the movie kind of shied away from any of that stuff because they didn't want us to even think about that dude. Does that make any sense at all? Or,
yeah.
Because up before then, it was just kind of preconceptions of this is what he had seen, or we know this is in his brain. But at one point in this alternate reality, he would have kept on living had the bomb been stopped. Yes, or something. But suddenly he became Jake Gyllenhaal, so where does he go?
Well, in my view, he lived until the bomb blew up. And so that's in reality. And in the alternate reality, he lived until the bomb blew up, and then Jake Gyllenhaal takes his body with his mind in it in the alternate reality and lives on from then.
But in reality, the bomb never blew up. In fact, they tell us that because he sends her the text message and she goes in. They're like, well, the bomb never blew. We missed a bombing attempt on a plane or a train because it didn't happen.
Alternate universe.
No, that's that's reality, isn't it?
No, if we're agreeing that source code creates alternate realities, they never specify what is the reality we watched most of the movie in. And then the alternate universe that we're led to believe was created. So they don't tell you which one you're looking at. So to believe the movie, what happens at the end is in the alternate reality where everything got fixed.
Ah, okay. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, but that still doesn't really bring up the question of what happens to the guy, though. The original guy. Like, the bomb, if that is in reality, like that late point where the commander is finding out the source code does indeed work, is in the new created reality, then that one dude is still kind of got screwed because he was on a train and suddenly his brain got zapped by and became Jake Gyllenhaal and... He doesn't really live out, or how does he just die after the 8 minutes if there's no explosion? Does that make sense?
Well, I think this movie we can safely call a precursor to Final Destination. At least that's how I feel, because these people are supposed to be dead, you know? They're probably going to die in really gory ways now, just because he saved them.
Maybe the Millennium Park beam structure rolled over. We don't know. That's where they cut it off.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess my other big question that wasn't quite jiving with for me was the fact that when he kept reliving the 8 minutes, like, he was reliving the 8 minutes because he was on the train and he was in that guy's body, seeing the things that that guy had seen, knowing what was going on because that guy knew it, you know, or at least could have found out the information, correct? Mm-hmm. Now, there's a scene where he says, all right, fine, I'm going to stop the train. We're going to stop the train. I'm going to get off and I'm going to follow this dude to a van a couple of blocks away, and then they're going to shoot me or whatever, and then it's going to be over with. Well, that guy never got off the train. So how would he ever have, you know, how is it possible for that to be in his 8 minute memory bank there? You know?
So well, how could he change the past?
Yeah, how could he change the past? Yeah. Like, because he was still on that train regardless. It makes sense that he's wandering around the train knowing that Jake Jones, okay, I know I'm stuck on this train because then I die. But I tell him I could potentially stop this plot. But the fact that he gets off the train, he's officially in a realm that, or, you know, a scenario that he couldn't have been in as that guy.
So, but everything he was doing in the source code as the guy, I think Sean Fentress, the name just came to me.
Yes.
Sean Fentress never did. So you're saying everything that Jake Gyllenhaal did in source code was a memory of Sean Fentress, then nothing would have happened because he sat in the train and then exploded.
No,
because Sean Fentress never got up and got the gun out of the safe, you know, up in that locker. He never ran around looking through people's bags. All that stuff was Jake Gyllenhaal controlling him. He was living in the memory, but he could act freely. That's why he thought it was a simulation at first when he came in, because everything was the same over and over again, but he was able to interact with everything as he chose.
But at the same, and yes, that's fine, and that you can play by different parameter, or, you know, you can play by different rules as Sean Fentress running around, but you're still confined to the parameters that Sean Fentress was confined to, which was the train cars and, you know, the people around him and whatnot. That made, there is, has, I felt like there was a bubble that he had to, at least should have had to have stayed in. This was actually his, you know, we were reliving his last 8 minutes, or the scenario where he was the last 8 minutes. So the real Sean Fentress never experienced getting off the train, or, you know, the world outside the bubble of the train. Then how can Jake Gyllenhaal as Sean Fentress invade that bubble, because he's confined to one?
But if you're accepting the idea of a bubble, why is the bubble necessarily the train? I mean, yeah. Why isn't the bubble the bottom floor of the train? Why is he able to go up to the top floor and get the gun? Why isn't the bubble his chair, you know?
He's able to do whatever he wants. Like, so you're saying, you have to realize that if he's creating an alternate reality, it's creating an alternate universe. So in source code, though, if you're, from what you're saying, nothing else is going on outside the train. That's the only thing in existence because it's in his memory. So if he got off the train, there should be nothing because that's not in his memory. Nothing should exist outside of what he saw in his memory, Sean Fentress. But if source code's creating alternate reality, everything is going on whether Jake Gyllenhaal, Sean Fentress knows it or not. There's, if he's in Chicago riding in a train, there's a little girl down in Texas kicking a soccer ball around. Whether that has nothing to do with the movie, but it's happening in the alternate reality source code created. So he can get off, he can run around, and then when 8 minutes goes up, he's gonna die. That's why he got run over by the train after he got off the original one. Because, he saw the explosion went off and realized that guy he thought, originally thought the one time he was following wasn't him.
Okay.
So he has to die. It's almost like a Final Destination.
Yeah.
He knows that somewhere in the source code he's gonna die, but he can do whatever he wants. He could get on a train going the opposite direction, and then he's gonna die eventually. But there's an alternate reality that is just an open map that he can go wherever he wants to.
Did you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I see where you're going with that, Drew. That makes a lot of sense. Just that, and then it actually kind of helps to explain the ending, too, because his death is only defined inside of the source code. And if the source code is turned off, then his death is no longer defined. So his life doesn't end at the 8 minutes. I mean, that still doesn't explain a whole lot of things like how parabolic calculus made another universe or anything like that. But that much of the movie does make sense with that explanation, I think. Although I am curious to know what would have happened if Christina had been in a very bad mood on that day. Like, and he had just absolutely hated her. Like, what if he couldn't stand that character? I think I would want to watch that movie just to see what happened.
And, alright, even if we do come around to, like I said, Drew's way of thinking, which does have some relevancy to it, I guess, you know, if I was to accept that. All the other simulations, versions of it, he would, at the 8 minute mark, die. And that was just it. Whether it was almost, like I said, it was almost kind of a final death. Oh, the train blew up. Bam, I'm hit by another train. Oh, the train blew up and I found this dude that has the remote code so that, bam, that guy's going to shoot me in the head. And the girl too. She's going to die. And we're both going to die together. What makes the last scenario different that he still survives? Like the Sean Fentress character, regardless of if it's, regardless of the fact that Jake Gyllenhaal's in it and the commander's hitting the stop button on him, why does he get a pass at that point?
Well, he prevented any way of their immediate death by removing the cell phones from the bomb.
Okay.
And then when the source code ran out, that source code was turned off or his life support was turned off. So his mind just lived on in the alternate reality that was created in the source code.
Because his death is defined by the source code. And if there isn't a source code, then his death isn't defined. Like, it's not cut off at 8 minutes. I mean, I'm not saying I accept the movie or I accept that fact, but I am saying that in a twisted way, it kind of makes sense. Like
there's the path he's following, and when the source code runs out, he dies. But if you turn that source code off, then he can continue on his path of his mind in Sean Fentress living on.
So here's an analogy. It's like he's going down a train track, right?
real original.
Yeah, and but then there's a split in the train track, and if with the source code on, it's like the wheels are locked into one path, and that path ends in a cliff, you know? But when they turn off the source code, they flip a lever so that he's now going down a new track to the right instead of the left or whatever. And this new path doesn't end in a cliff. Like, it doesn't necessarily have a set ending.
Continue on.
Okay.
The source code only lasts 8 minutes regardless. So he's going to die either way in the source code. So if you turn that off, if they could, so technically if they would have turned it off at 4 minutes, he could have just done the exact same thing and saved the half of the movie.
Perhaps. Or he still would have blown up, though, at that point, and the world wouldn't have existed.
If he hadn't found it out, yeah.
It seemed like it took most of those 8 minutes to find it. And I guess then call his dad.
Whatnot. Yeah. You know, I did really like his final confrontation with the bomber, though. Like, I thought that was kind of cool when he chained him to the train. Mm-hmm. He's like, you're not going to blow anybody up. I was like, yes.
And then he was just crying because he was so sad and confused how he's like,
you know.
Yeah.
I liked that. Like, so all those things work. Now, how did he get, and I suppose Drew's just going to say he called him in the real or the new created reality. He called his father.
Yeah.
At that point, he's like, hey, this dude's dead. Or like, I'm dead, you know, Coulter Stevens. And I served with him, sir. And, you know, he's sorry. Was he calling the real world then, I assume? Or was he calling his dad in an alternate world, which I know is Drew smiley nod and go, yes.
Does it make a difference, though, which world he was calling? Because,
well, I think it does, because if you're able to call out of the alternate realities, I mean, that makes, that is kind of an important thing that's overlooked.
Well, I think, yeah, I don't know if it does matter, because it, remember, most of the stuff was in Jake Gyllenhaal's head. We found out that he was dead while he's in source code already, and that the capsule that he was in was just his imagination putting that together, making sense. So I think that
talking to someone that was his dad's voice just gave him, you know, conclusion to his, you know, fight with his dad. I think that it was more for him than for us to decipher what it was.
Because I guess I was initially, and again, like I said, you guys are kind of saying, hey, it was both worlds were an alternate reality at the end after time to stop. I had gotten to that point where I believe he had called out to a reality outside the source code to his dad and talked to him. And then I believed he had sent an email to Goodwin. Yes, Goodwin for, you know, going, the source code works from the source code reality to reality there. And those things are like, well, can you communicate outside this? And what problems does that create, or plot holes and things?
I don't think when he emailed Goodwin, I don't think that went outside the source code. Because outside the source code, in the original reality, the train blows up. Inside the source code, the train doesn't blow up, and the source code is a success.
Yeah, and I believe that explained earlier on by Rutledge that you cannot communicate outside of the source code. That how he said, I called the Air Force base and I was going to get connected to you. And he said, even if you did, you would talk to another version of me. So that kind of confirms earlier on in the movie that you cannot call outside of the source code. Okay. Because if going along Jim's brilliant train analogy, taking the other track, that the life will go on. You know, he's called, if he texted Goodwin, says, oh, this is going to happen. It's a whole nother reality. We just left the train explosion reality and we've moved on to this other track because we've ended the source code. We're now following Jake Gyllenhaal in the body of Sean Fentress, who've taken the other path of saving everyone on the train and living on.
Okay, fair enough. The only thing that just popped in my brain now, and maybe easily explained away because I haven't thought of it. All right, then in that new reality, once the train track has shifted, as we keep using that analogy, Jake Gyllenhaal is Sean Fentress, but there's also Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yep.
So at that point, we've got two Jake Gyllenhaals in the newly created source code reality, and how does that work?
We'll see. It's going to result in an infinite number of parallel universes with an infinite number of Jake Gyllenhaals.
If he continues to save the train.
Right, which is why...
Which he wouldn't need to save the train anymore.
Because he's not on it.
But
there would be other situations where they would use the source code, which is why this movie, in my mind, like, as a movie, it's good, but when you use the laws of physics, it's not good.
At that point, I'm getting more on that wave of, okay, of acceptance, at least, you know, with that. And I can take that. But, like you were just saying, there's always going to be that next scenario where all of a sudden that means that all these rules that were just created in the original world that apply as source code world would also be applied again, and suddenly we'd split off into two more. Is that infinite number and things like that. I think that's where this story is going to fall apart pretty quickly.
Well, if we acknowledge that source code creates an alternate reality, why can't it create another one? Or an infinite amount of them?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm with you there. Like, it could. If it could create one, it could create plenty more, which would be really bizarre because it would end up...
But then they're all parallel universes, so the mind of Jake Gyllenhaal has no knowledge of what's going on with the Jake Gyllenhaal body at the Air Force Base. So he's separated from that now. He's no longer attached to the body that's working the source code. So he doesn't care what happens because he's in a new body.
Like, he really does become Sean Fentress. He's not at all Coulter Stevens.
Yeah. And so you're saying that Coulter Stevens in the new source code reality also gets that same option to opt out and jump into source code 2, you know, when he saves a tragic kitten from a hot air balloon incident or something, you know, which was the dumbest scenario ever. But, you know, this little kitten falling out, he jumps up and saves it. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, well, now we've saved that. We're clicking the button in source code to cut you off. And he's like, that's cool. I'm now in the balloon with the kitten in the next world. Yep. And then there's another Coulter Stevens, because that scenario was taken over, or you already done. up, let's jump to the next. And we just keep kind of having the original one from each world invade the next one while that Jake Gyllenhaal's there. And then that one invades. Is that kind of where we're going?
We could all be Jake Gyllenhaal right now.
Yeah, we could be Jake Gyllenhaal. We could be a original version of Jake Gyllenhaal under that theory.
Yeah.
That's I can walk away believing that because creating a parallel universe is not conflicting with any, they're not butting heads and creating a paradox because it's splitting off on another train track, allowing the movie to continue on another path.
But see, okay, this is a little off topic, but with time travel, if you think about it, if you go back in time, you can't change anything. Like the way I view it, you physically can't change anything because whatever you did to change something, that's already happened and that was supposed to happen. Like people could have gone back to the 1900s, you know, or to the late 1800s, started the Industrial Revolution. You know, that could have happened and we would never know if it was somebody from the future and if our world should be completely different right now. You know what I mean? Like some people say if you go back into like the dinosaur times and squish a bug, you could end the world. But I say, if you go back in time and squish a bug, you were meant to squish that bug. You know what I mean? So
that's part of your timeline?
Yeah. So Coulter Stevens goes back into Sean Fentress's body. Everything he does, he was meant to do. Like,
so now you're talking about fate.
Yeah.
Well, if think about this. If we've never seen anyone from the future, does that mean time travel doesn't exist?
Or maybe they're really well hidden. Or maybe Men in Black really happens and they have like a little flashy thing that they can erase our memories.
Or have you seen that clip from Charlie Chaplin's Modern Times where it looks like a woman's talking on a cell phone?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. I don't know.
Wow. Look where we've ended
up. Yeah. All right. Well, I think the point is...
Oh, I actually have... Sorry.
Okay, go for it.
One thing that was kind of confusing me... I just want to clarify this. So, in the end, they show you that the entire time that they've been talking, Goodwin and Coulter Stevens, that he is actually speaking through a computer. His brain is typing out his responses. So are they pumping the camera? They are holding the camera and microphone up to their faces. Is he actually seeing that? Or is the video in his capsule that he's imagined, is that just displaying that so his mind can wrap it around? Because they actually are recording and using a microphone while communicating with him via computer.
This is going to be the most biggest cop-out answer ever, and because I really hadn't thought of any of that beforehand, and I really don't know how important it is, but they show the point where like he's the vegetable in the little display case there, whatever you want to call it.
And his brain,
brain is cut open, and there's like wires coming out of it. For some reason, I was thinking AV, red, yellow, blue, Jackson is plugged into the back of his brain, problem solved. I don't know. I mean, that's the best I can come up with.
If that's what they were doing, I guess I'd be okay with that. But that was one thing that I was like, well, why did they do that? If he was talking through type on a computer, why wouldn't they just type back and then that would get sent to his brain?
Because it seemed more real to him. I don't know. I don't know. I'm just accepting for some reason, if you've accepted everything else up to this point about this movie, and you see wires coming out of his brain, even though they weren't composite AV cables or something being plugged in, which would be a little hokey, I just accepted that and moved on. I don't know why that was the small detail I didn't worry about.
But I got cut up on that watching it. Again, I was confused.
That's a really good question, though. Like, how does he have any idea what Goodwin looks like? Because...
Unless they're putting into like his brainstem and his, you know, his connection to his eye. Yeah.
So what you're saying is if we really wanted, Goodwin could look like Drew in real life, but as long as they're just imposing or putting upon him that he looks like somebody else.
Did they ever say her first name in the movie? I don't know.
Colleen, isn't it?
Did they mention that?
Yes. Okay. I really call her.
All right. Well, that would have been funny to just.
What's up, Rick?
Rick Goodwin that he's been talking to the entire time.
Rick's a big guy.
Picturing as a redhead.
All right. Well, with that in mind, I think that pretty much kind of wraps up the discussion of our source code discussion there.
I think I convinced everybody that this could happen.
No. I just didn't want to get into the whole parabolic calculus isn't magic thing. Because that really makes me angry because, I mean, I've studied it to a certain extent. No.
I think that...
Well, if they can make an alternate reality...
They can't make an alternate reality is my point. And also there's
that still... That wasn't your point.
No. That's my point right now. Also, there's still the fact that they're sending him back 8 minutes before the guy dies, even though the whole point of source code is to go in at the moment of death.
That was a bad analogy.
It was a terrible analogy.
I think that was poorly written.
An
afterglow would mean that they'd be in rubble.
Well, they had to take something like, you know, physics there and dumb it down to Joe public, you know, that can understand it, and they found a really dumb analogy, I think.
Yeah, there's
but
a difference.
What else would you be able to really throw out that would, what would you use to describe, if you were in charge of writing the movie, what would you change, or how would you describe something that basic?
I don't know. I mean,
because
I'm not
creative.
Because
you've
got
to get to a point where, you know, you've thought this through and thought about it, but you've got to explain it to somebody who is from... Yeah, Boone, Iowa. And how are you going
to
explain?
Any Boone listeners.
Sorry, Boone. If you were going to explain that to Boonies, how would you do it and make sense? The light bulb thing may have been the best they came up with. They could have, you know, focus grouped the heck out of this and found out. And that's
well, I just disagree with the idea of a source code being possible in the first place. I mean, I genuinely don't think this could ever happen because. How would you just take over somebody's brain? How does that happen? Like, just because, say I dropped dead of a heart attack, are you guys going to be able to somehow just reanimate my corpse and relive the last 8 minutes of this movie review?
Maybe.
Maybe
we're doing that right now.
Especially if you think about...
or putting all this memory in this conversation into your brain.
Like, calculus is like going from acceleration to velocity, you know? It's not, like, taking over somebody's brain.
It's not medical science.
Yeah, that it just doesn't make sense to me, I guess. I don't know. But if
that's
you,
why I'm not questioning it.
Yeah, if you just accept that source code is possible, then you're fine. But
it's a tough thing to accept.
Just don't overanalyze it.
Yeah. And I was more interested in, kind of the medium between, where I haven't overthought it as much as, you know, from that analytical point that Jim probably has.
Cobra,
but your friends call you Jim, so that means I can call you Jim. Right? I hope. Anyway, I haven't thought it as much as you have. Drew, wasn't as willing of acceptance as Drew was on it, and I was somewhere in between. And I guess that's why the movie, to me, has its definite flaws. But there is a point where I can accept it. I just would have been much happier if we had stopped in the freeze frame and let me had figured it all out in the end and not had the track.
I would accept that ending as well.
Because at that point I felt like the film had achieved all of its goals. He wanted to save people. He did, you know, in their own way. It cost him $126 in the new source code world. He got everybody to laugh, everybody having a good time. Explosion goes. They're safe. They're safe from the monotony of their boring lives. And then at that point, it freezes. We don't go to black or anything, you know. We could have even started rolling the credits on the freeze frame for all I care. But at that point, we're realizing that maybe it goes on. Maybe it doesn't. All is well with the world. Maybe the reality is created. Maybe it's not. But
so you're saying end it with something like a Shutter Island moment or like an Inception moment where it's just... It's left to the viewer to decide.
Exactly.
As opposed to being told.
Exactly. I don't need to be told. And I think there's a subtlety to each, you know, that too. If some people go, oh, it's over, it's done, you know, that. But if you want to believe it, it's still a happy ending at that point. And there was no need to drag it off for the tacked on Hollywood, let's make people feel good. And instead, it made some people feel good, but a lot of people going, that made no sense, and scratching their heads.
Leaving the theater after, I actually had a conversation outside with someone who asked me, do you know what happened at the end? And so we tried to quickly, without
you know, getting too personal information with each other, just try to talk it over. But it was nothing like this movie review, but we both liked it, but it did make you think about it for a while. I liked both. If it would have ended in the freeze, I would have liked that one. I also was okay with the ending, with them living on being happy.
I guess it's a good thing that you start a conversation. You know, it's a conversation piece when it's you talking about it. But what we're talking about is for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And that's where I think it goes horribly astray. I mean, there's something about a film that when it's done well, you can just, Inception, for example, where we talk that, and you can go either way on that. But Source Code, there's a point where that conversation just goes really stupid really fast.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, you jumped to kittens and hot air balloons.
I did, right, you know. Off the bat. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I don't know if that makes any sense. But that's where I was kind of going with, you know, there's at least, I feel like something like Inception's really carefully thought through and almost double checked in ways. And yes, you can tear it apart, but it's still thought through somewhat. Source Code was thought through about 80% of the way. And then they're like, there's about 20% that if someone wants to tear this apart, could,
but I think
in
the end, though, that's just the difference between a movie like Inception, where personally I could see that winning an Oscar, compared to Source Code, where personally I could see that being maybe worth Redboxing but not buying. You know, I don't know if that makes any sense. Like, it's just a different caliber of movie,
and I don't think that makes, I don't want to say makes it a worse movie, but I mean, it's, as long, I guess, in a film, as long as you're getting an enjoyable experience out of it, because that's what really matters. Yeah,
that's true.
And all in all, I think I enjoyed it. I still have my questions. Some we've even cleared up discussing today, but I mean, I still had fun with it.
I think a lot of people had fun with it. I think Rotten Tomatoes had a 91% rating on this movie. So it's overall, I mean, it doesn't say people aren't leaving confused. They enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
Will it stand up to the test of time, though? Like, let's say we look 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road. Is anyone going to care about Source Code? Personally, I say no. I think it's going to be forgotten about, and it's not going to be really talked about.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we're talking about it now because it's coming out now, but we won't be talking about it a month from now. You know?
Until an alternate reality gets created. Source Code comes, we all come back to Source Code and say, oh my gosh, it was right.
So wait, at the point, what you're saying is in the alternate reality, they're going to go back to the point where Source Code came out on DVD, and then be like, and also the track is going to switch, and suddenly in that alternate reality, Source Code is amazing.
And then they'll end up at boxofficeboredom.com.
Ooh.
Or we're going to reach a point where everybody's Jake Gyllenhaal, and we're just going to be like, wait a second, this seems really fishy. I know I'm Jake Gyllenhaal. Would you also happen to be this guy, too? Because, you know, even if he's
a different person, I was a pilot in Afghanistan. I flew two sorties yesterday.
Yeah. The weird thing for me, though, was when he was Sean Ventress and he pulled out his license, on the license it said teacher. Do either of you have your job description on your license?
No.
What was that?
I assumed it was a student ID, actually, not a driver's license.
It looked like a license to me. Maybe it is, but...
Because I did see that. Like, and I had that moment where I was like, that's his license as teacher, but I dismissed it quickly because, I mean, I'm old and they didn't really do that in my school, but I know they do a lot of your... Like, by now, they'll hand you your student ID that you have to show everywhere, you know, to prove that you exist in, you know, the school district. That was how I summed it up.
Yeah, I didn't get hung up on that. It was weird, but it wasn't like, why is that there?
Yeah, same. I just thought it was worth pointing out because I laughed at that a little bit in the movie. Just, huh.
All right, so what we've learned today is that we're all quite possibly part of our alternate reality in a version of Jake Gyllenhaal. And that pretty much sums up our podcast for today. As for the future there, you can find you know, our reviews and whatnot on boxofficeboredom.com. You can find me on Twitter at boxofficeboard. And you can also email me, Jason, you know, at boxofficeboredom@gmail.com. And I guess also if you had any other questions, comments, or stuff, just get them over to boxofficeboredom@gmail.com. I'll make sure I also get stuff passed on to, you know, appropriate people and whatnot. But
Jim, where can we find you? I'm sorry.
Cobra. Jim, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me, Cobra, on Twitter at JamesGriffith01, which I know is really original. That's about it. I don't blog, so...
And I'd also like to point out that even though he was disguising himself as Cobra Jim, he just gave out his full name. Drew, how about you? Where can we find you?
Well, if you really wanted to find me, you could find me on twitter.com/DrewVschlosser. And sometimes I say funny stuff, but it's probably not worth it.
It's worth it.
Wow, that was the worst plug for your Twitter account I ever heard.
Huge, not very enthusiastic.
Huge undersell. He's a funny guy.
And, you know, in honor of Matt Van Winkle, who is normally a regular host, you know, of the podcast, he's not here today. We're going to try to do this without screwing it up for him. You can find Matt, who is absent today. He's at Matt Van Winkle on Twitter. And mattvw.blogspot.com. Didn't one take, Matt. Take that. All right. Until next time. Happy movie watching, and hope to talk to y'all soon.
I'm okay with it because I like conclusions. You can get any length of Ethernet cable you want.